Thank you for the pause.
Food stamps come on the last of the month. You pick them up and get your stamps on the first of the month. Well, hot dog. Now look what a big favor they did everybody, this nice federal government. Kept those post offices open a whole 2 hours later than usual. And these people hadn't done anything except watch everything in their world be looted and burned up. And so now comes the second, and I've got my little wad of money. Where in the world are they going to spend it? They don't have any power with which to cook if they got food. And some were so desperate they went to the Red Cross shelter only to find that there were no policemen to accompany the Red Cross vehicle, so there was no food. What are you going to do when it is an earthquake and there are 17 million people? This was a trial run. And you're not even out of the weekend yet. They fully plan to pull that San Andreas fault wide open. They tried it on both ends to trigger it, and it didn't go. The ideal thing, they calculated, Mr. Kissinger sat and enjoyed himself while they thought of it, was to pull it down while it was burning there. And everything was out of control. They tried to get something going sooner in San Francisco, but it takes a while to get things going and get enough people even interested enough to go out and do anything. But you can always count on evening coming and the booze starts flowing and the drugs start being utilized, and then you start talking this up and talking this up, and you could see it in the very church where they were supposed to be praying and quietly having a demonstration. They were just building it and building it and building it. This was so, even if you didn't participate, you could justify it. And this is the most helpless of all the people. All they can do is rise up and burn. They can't do anything else. And I'll bet you everyone in this room was happy to see a Korean get on top of the roof with an Uzi machine gun. I was. That'll give you permission to think that's a pretty good idea. And I'll bet you before it's done, they'll have them up on trial. What do you do? What do you do? I can't answer that. I'll tell you what you in this room do. You stay out of it. You do not have the privilege of picking up your Uzi machine gun and going anywhere with it. They'll get rid of you. They already follow you around like you have, well, like super glue. And they're just waiting for you to do something. And there is no one small group that can do anything about it. That's why they had to bring in the police. Because, you see, you don't have that many happy white people. And yet, in every little community in Los Angeles, out they went and stocked up on ammunition, and ones in this room have relatives who did it, expecting it to slop over all the way into the bedroom communities of Los Angeles. And you see, it made it all the way uptown to Hollywood and into the business section. They about overdid it if they'd literally broken in and set fire to that federal building. They tried, but they weren't able to get the fire started. So you're in it. You have a dual situation going. I can't have the privilege of just speaking on a few riots in Los Angeles that appear to be racist, because it's not. It is just another divide, conquer, man against man, nation against nation. So while you're not paying any attention, you have to understand what else is going on around your nation. I thought it interesting to note that a child really had brought a weapon into a school north of Sacramento, had shot about 10 people, and held 50 some odd children hostage, and it didn't even make it to the news. Oberly, somewhere in that mess is something about Ohio. I want you to read it.
All right.
Remember the movie Red Dawn, that no one ever thought could happen? Not in America. Russia, airplanes, airports, little town USA. Do you have it?
Yes. Somewhere in the now 56 journals and 18 volumes of Phoenix Liberator, Sananda said that we should obtain a copy of the movie Red Dawn because, if I remember correctly, he said, it depicted a reality we would someday soon get to know personally. I have to confess I couldn't digest that statement when he first presented it. I simply could not see at that time how such a scenario could ever become a reality in America. America the beautiful, America the land of the free and brave. Well, today, April 27th, 1992, it appears the Red Dawn at long last has arrived. With all my heart, I hope I am not right. With all my heart, I pray that I am misreading, overreacting, and should just calm down right now and relax. Things surely cannot be as bad as my mind, as my soul, as my spirit say they are. Please refer to the three articles enclosed from the Dayton Daily News of this day. Russians eye air hub in Dayton. That's one. The second one is finance ministers okay aid package for Russia, $24 billion plus, while California continues to shake.
Well, and Mr. Gorbachev is coming to, you notice, to visit Wall Street and your banking concerns.
Major world events, every one. All, I believe, correlated. No, not just correlated. All causally related. Commander Hatton, please help me sort this out. I am in shock. This is exactly, precisely, what our master teacher said would happen. Am I overreacting? Am I making something out of nothing? I mean, what if, just what if, they are going to send Spetsnaz troops to Rickenbacker, or send KGB, military troops, tanks, etc., to the Dayton hub? I asked several colleagues today, friends, to read the article, and they laughed. One said, I care about what happens in Columbus or Dayton with the Russians as much as I care about the Japanese quest for Pebble Beach. Zero. End of conversation. 2 days ago, I showed one of these gentlemen Dr. Coleman's beautiful, wondrous chart of the total global organization of the Committee of 300 and its major organizations. This person, one of my best friends at work, screamed at me. You're a neo-Nazi. You are showing me exactly the kind of thing that Goebbels passed around in the 1920s. I was astounded by his reaction. I begged him to read some of the material from Spotlight on Clinton and BCCI. I mentioned that Frontline on TV that very night had confirmed most of the essentials. Neo-Nazi, I said, what are you talking about? We are talking about a man who wants to be president of the United States, for heaven's sake, who allegedly has very, very nasty connections. He was not interested in that. He wouldn't even read the headlines. I was stunned. I wouldn't even read what he claimed was neo-Nazi literature. My very, very good friend, a man I trust, a man I work with daily. Quietly, I told him if at any time he wanted to share and discuss any opinion, any facts, any ideas with me, I would be thrilled to do so. But I backed off and left him to find his own peace. The truth, the facts, hard data, produced by years and years of blood, sweat, and the most courageous patriotism I can fathom. Most people simply do not want or cannot hear such things. So be it. The fact is, the Russians are setting up shop in Columbus, and will soon do so in Dayton. And they are doing exactly what Commander Hatton has been telling us again and again and again they would do. Dr. Coleman, you have said 100 times, wake up. I've read your new book, I'm rereading your new book, and I know, I absolutely know what you are talking about. Yes, it's unbelievably hard to accept, but President Fujimori's actions and recent events in Peru alone have demonstrated you know exactly who, what, where, when, and how these evil men operate and ply their trade. I'm heartsick, I'm overwhelmed by the starkness and overt nature of this New World Order's modus operandi. And there it is, and here it is, in Dayton, Ohio. I could write you a book of my thoughts this day, I will not. I simply beg you, Commander, to help me understand just what is happening here in Dayton, in depth. Please, I'm not asking for a personal response, you both are so busy. I am asking that you share more about these activities in tapes, in monographs, or in any way you choose. And please, please help us all to see and understand more about what is really behind these machinations that now are coming right to our very own front doors. Just who is coming to Dayton? Just what is their purpose? And how many other cities are such occupation? In how many other cities are such occupations underway? Recently, Commander Hatton said a huge, huge list of tunnels and underground facilities now fully supplied and operational. Ohio was not well represented on that list. He told us why. Because the Russians were above ground in Ohio and Columbus. And he was right as can be. This morning I was told they are coming to Emory's Hub, a stone's throw away from my house in Dayton, and if the Spetsnaz come, based on briefings Commander Hatton gave us about them some months ago, I do not think I'd know one if I saw one. He she would speak, look, and act just like any other American, except they're killers, programmed to destroy on command. Right on my front step, that sends shivers up my spine. Enough. Please share whatever and whenever you can with all of us. In the meantime, rest assured I'm totally secure in the knowledge that the Master Teacher attends all. I cherish you both for your bravery and for your willingness to share truth with us. Your student into infinity, Daniel Reynolds, Dayton, Ohio.
And they said, we will take your nation and we won't have to fire a shot. Lenin said, they will hang themselves and they will furnish the rope to do it. They've trained your police officers in Los Angeles, San Francisco. They're testing them. I can't urge one strongly enough to go back and look at Arthur Robinson's book, Survival is 10 Feet. No, that may have been ours. Let's see, Fighting Chance, 10 Feet. Well, go read ours too, because it was his. And he struggled and struggled and struggled. And I can give you a couple of incidents that can strike home to each of you in its own way. Dr. Robinson went to his village and he said, I personally will foot the bill to install a shelter in this town for our children. And I believe that he suggested that it be put under the school ground. I could be wrong with that. I'm not going to look it up. But at any rate, all that was needed was just a space. And the town refused. How would you decide who would get in it? Not we'll build enough for all of them. How would you decide who would be saved? The same thing happened identically with this book when we wrote it. The very ones originally who were going to publish it refused to even consider the book because they said it's evil. How would you decide who gets to be in it? Not, can't we get together and go build something so that we can all survive here? But how will you decide who gets to be in it? I can't help ones. I can only offer. But I would suggest that the one from Ashland get in touch with Arthur Robinson. It won't help to come here. We don't have any yet either, do we? And they're efforting to make blame sure that nobody has resources enough to have shelters. And they're not going to put them in for you. And if you go knock on Northrop today, they'll shoot you. Just as sure as the world, they won't even let you get to the door to knock. They're sending spacecraft out. And they are on a crash program. My goodness, surely you heard it. While another five buildings are burning in the night, then comes morning and they start giving you some statistics of Los Angeles. 49 dead, blah, 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 $500 million. $500 million crashed on Edwards Runway 4 days ago. And it didn't even hardly make the news. $500 million in a piece of junk that couldn't even land. It was like a fly swatter. And you're going to go to space, and what are you going to study? Weightlessness. We're going to see if tomatoes will grow in weightlessness. You can grow them down here with weight and get $2 a pound. Is there something wrong with this? What are you doing building another prototype of something that wouldn't fly in the first place? You had to account for $500 million, plus the fact that what you saw was not what happened. That's what really ticks me off. Did a plane crash at Edwards? Oh my God, more than you will ever dream about. Well, this was going to be a better Phantom stealth. Well, if it was good at all, it would be better. But what in the world will you use as trappings to salt the mine, if you will, when one start flying over? What do you think really might have crashed there? What do you think maybe down there? They have to give you something to see when one's bumble over the property. We had a lot of fun on the 17th of August, 1987. We had a nice round craft with 5 crew members right out at Yucca Flats. And they couldn't budge it. They couldn't get in it. They couldn't get near it. And it wasn't very far off the road. So when we finally let them near it, they pulled out 5 cosmonauts. All nice, tall, lean Pleiadians. All of them appeared to be dead, but 2 did show life signs. But they couldn't do anything to any of them anyway. They couldn't get around them to touch them. They'd get electric shock. Well, finally, when they figured out what to do about that, they transported them. Can you believe this? From Yucca Flats to Edwards Air Force Base first? A little out of your way, since they ended up at Nellis in Las Vegas, 50 miles away from where it was down. Oh, it was an interesting little period of a few days. And, of course, all of the energy forms were sitting aboard craft tinkering with your military because they didn't know what to do with these 2 that weren't dead. And they're still not dead. They have them over at Nellis. They have them in intensive care or whatever, you know, all this mechanism, all this stuff around them. And every now and then, their own owners tweak them a little bit. You know, as you walk in the room, oh, I think I'll tweak Joe a little bit. And he'll gasp and gulp and everyone in the room will turn purple, you know. It's serious time. And they give you these things. doesn't matter what did or did not crash. Just know that what you saw was not what you got. And how do you know that? Because when that plane hit that ground without a landing gear, it burst into flames. You could see it. And yet the pilot walked away with only minor injuries. A pilot was not going to walk away from that mess. It isn't so much that these things are shown to you or told to you, it is that the truth would suffice. Why do they make up such stupid tales? And basically, let me tell you why. Because you buy it every time. Every time. They never have to change their tape because you buy it every time. Every generation buys it. I'd like some opinions about this week. I'd like somebody in this room to share with us. Some of you have been down in LA, some of you have been around other places, some of you have just flat heard things that others haven't. By the way, don't think that Bakersfield was left unscathed.
Well, I heard someone tried to buy a gun and all the gun shops were closed.
Yes.
My son has to go into LA all the time to work. He works for Bell Telephone. And he called me that first night and said that the company beeped him and told them all to get out of there. 2 o'clock. They had to leave town immediately and leave all their service go. And he was in the morning on a street that was had a big mess on it in the afternoon. And he got out and he said that they made everybody in the whole Bell system that were in LA leave. And they couldn't go back yet.
All the non-AT&T services went down.
Yeah.
In other words, Sprint and all the other ones.
Yeah.
They weren't working. AT&T was the only one that worked.
Well, he said Bell was having a time, too. He said, you've never seen such a mess. And he'd never ever seen such a mess, driving through the streets and the people and what was going on.
And the people weren't taking food, they were taking things. TVs and things like that.
I thought it was interesting that I went to make a credit card phone call and it didn't work. It has always worked. I mean, why would the computers, you know, why would the computers be affected? I just went to make a credit card phone call by computer. And it said that you had to wait for an operator or something. It didn't function normally when I was in L.A. And when I went to drive out of L.A. on Thursday, it took approximately an hour to go about 3 miles just to get onto the freeway. The traffic was so bad. And outside of the area where all the, you know, southeast LA or south central, I saw definitely more than the average number of vehicles with shattered windows driving around. It was just like 3 or 4, but usually you'd see one maybe in a month or two, and it was just a little strange.
From here on Thursday night, you could not, if they kept giving you this information, that the lines were busy, and you called
it
east.
Isn't that interesting? This is what I want to hear.
Let me also share my experience. I live right there at the corner of World Cup and Hollywood Boulevard. And April 30, heavily in the plans set for the day. But last minute, I've been feeling a very terrible vibration of fire right in my place. So last minute, about 2 o'clock, I decided to move out of that apartment. I called up my driver in my shop to pick me up in the truck. And I heard the move out of the apartment. after about 2 hours, I've been telling my neighbors in the building to move out or, you know, consider getting themselves under safety because I'm feeling some kind of terrible, I couldn't even explain it. I just feel the situation, and I had this dream a month ago about these things happening, but I couldn't explain. So what I did was last month, without even knowing what's going to happen, I just followed my instinct, my intuition, and talked to the landlord that to give her the notice of my moving out. Last minute, April 30, after about 2 o'clock, I just, by instinct or by whatever, by gut feel, I immediately move out. And a few hours after that, the building next to my apartment was blown up. It was in fire. There was heavily raised in fire. And as I was calling my neighbors in the apartment, everybody was in panic, moving all their stuff from out of the building. So it makes me feel good that I was able to get out of there and have to undergo the same traumatic experience.
I found it very interesting that these arsonists were like they're invisible. Nobody ever actually saw them. And then I heard a comment from a co-worker of mine saying that a couple of gang members were caught and they commented that they were paid to do this.
Yes.
Along those lines.
Yes.
Is it possible, I was watching on television, and I noticed that the fires were a little bit different, that the roofs, when they run into smoke coming out of the windows, that the roofs were being burnt. And for some reason, by listening to about the possibility of designating for the earthquake, could there have been some possibilities that before this was happening, there was plans made by maybe some service people that went to these various companies and planted something that could be designated?
Well, I'm sure there probably were.
I didn't know if I was far-fetched in my thinking or not, but the way that they were set, it seemed to me the small companies, I'm not talking about the looting places, but I'm talking about the little industrial places that were entrepreneur-type businesses.
Well, in the drive-by type of bombings, if you will, the cocktail type, the gasoline fires, very frequently those are thrown onto the roof. So that accounts for some of it. Also, many of the little shops have a common roof, common attic, and it just goes through that like a tunnel. So there are many things that you have brought into play here. You had Daryl Gates warning all of you. Burma, for one, is a bit naive. You would think that with all of my mouth that she would not be. And yet she has to spend her time feeling the same way the rest of you do. You're only going to know when to get out by listening to that warning and responding. You cannot depend on someone blowing a whistle in your ear or shaking you. You're going to have to put things into perspective. And you're going to have to listen to your own warning. And act accordingly. But as we sit here, you can see what happened. You've got 17 million people in Greater Los Angeles. And all of the international papers, that's what's on their front page. even Gaddafi is making his speeches. And percentage-wise, you're untouched. So you have to know that it's political. And yet your country has become a tinderbox, ready to explode like this. This just shows you how far along the plan has progressed. And ones want to believe that if we just pray, it will all go away. Well, I sit and hope that you will pray for wisdom, because it's not going to go away. And these are only the beginnings as things begin to fall apart. And therefore you can't wait and wait and wait to make some preparations. On the other hand, you have to use wisdom with that also. Just running helter and skelter for someone else to tend you or be responsible for you is not the way to do it. And it's like ones asking me, well, what should I do? Tell me what to do. I'm not going to tell you what to do. That is not my mission. That is yours. And I have 6 billion people to be concerned about. And I don't want to sound harsh or hard. I am coming through very bluntly. I don't like that. We have a visitor here with us. I feel like this is my son. And Randall, would you please acknowledge that?
I acknowledge.
And I know that he sits here and says, well, the old man hasn't changed much. He's still yelling at everybody. But we've come a long way. A long way. We've all done a lot of work. And I'm very pleased to see the work that you've been doing. And I'm glad to see that you've brought a friend. I get crosswise with ones. Sometimes harder than I would like to be, because of the great responsibility that's fallen on the shoulders of all of you ones. I will have to make some amends with Dr. Coleman. My intent is not to be insulting. My intent is to bring truth. And yet sometimes the truth is painful. And I realize that very often you ones have very little recourse but defense. And as a matter of fact, I want to say, just like you ones do, that, well, I don't understand what it is. Well, I understand exactly what it is. When you hit the nail on the head and it seems small, you wish you hadn't said it or done it or whatever. And instead of being able to let it go and moving on, you've got to get hung up about it. And it's part of growing. It's part of growing. But you see, I will not apologize to Dr. Coleman for what he perceives he's been damaged by me about. I made a statement that perhaps Coleman is not his name. Well, I will guarantee you, if you go to the gate and try to get into the place where he lives, if you ask for Coleman, you will not get him. So what are we talking about? I'm trying to keep you alive. You are human beings. You are not even atmospherians yet. You aren't even antheriums yet.
Pretty far down.
Yeah, right.
Thank you for the pause.
Food stamps come on the last of the month. You pick them up and get your stamps on the first of the month. Well, hot dog. Now look what a big favor they did everybody, this nice federal government. Kept those post offices open a whole 2 hours later than usual. And these people hadn't done anything except watch everything in their world be looted and burned up. And so now comes the second, and I've got my little wad of money. Where in the world are they going to spend it? They don't have any power with which to cook if they got food. And some were so desperate they went to the Red Cross shelter only to find that there were no policemen to accompany the Red Cross vehicle, so there was no food. What are you going to do when it is an earthquake and there are 17 million people? This was a trial run. And you're not even out of the weekend yet. They fully plan to pull that San Andreas fault wide open. They tried it on both ends to trigger it. And it didn't go. The ideal thing they calculated, Mr. Kissinger sat and enjoyed himself while they thought of it, was to pull it down while it was burning there. And everything was out of control. They tried to get something going sooner in San Francisco, but it takes a while to get things going and get enough people even interested enough to go out and do anything. But you can always count on evening coming and the booze starts flowing and the drugs start being utilized. And then you start talking this up and talking this up, and you could see it in the very church where they were supposed to be praying and quietly having a demonstration. They were just building it and building it and building it. This was so, even if you didn't participate, you could justify it. And this is the most helpless of all the people. All they can do is rise up and burn. They can't do anything else. And I'll bet you everyone in this room was happy to see a Korean get on top of the roof with an Uzi machine gun. I was. That'll give you permission to think that's a pretty good idea. And I'll bet you before it's done, they'll have them up on trial. What do you do? What do you do? I can't answer that. I'll tell you what you in this room do. You stay out of it. You do not have the privilege of picking up your Uzi machine gun and going anywhere with it. They'll get rid of you. They already follow you around like you have, well, like super glue. And they're just waiting for you to do something. And there is no one small group that can do anything about it. That's why they had to bring in the police. Because, you see, you don't have that many happy white people. And yet, in every little community in Los Angeles, out they went and stocked up on ammunition, and ones in this room have relatives who did it, expecting it to slop over all the way into the bedroom communities of Los Angeles. And you see, it made it all the way uptown to Hollywood and into the business section. They about overdid it if they'd literally broken in and set fire to that federal building. They tried, but they weren't able to get the fire started. So you're in it. You have a dual situation going. I can't have the privilege of just speaking on a few riots in Los Angeles that appear to be racist, because it's not. It is just another divide, conquer, man against man, nation against nation. So while you're not paying any attention, you have to understand what else is going on around your nation. I thought it interesting to note that a child really had brought a weapon into a school north of Sacramento, had shot about 10 people, and held 50 some odd children hostage, and it didn't even make it to the news. Oberly, somewhere in that mess is something about Ohio. I want you to read it.
All right.
Remember the movie Red Dawn that no one ever thought could happen? Not in America. Russia, airplanes, airports, little town USA. Do you have it?
Yes. Somewhere in the now 56 journals and 18 volumes of Phoenix Liberators, Sananda said that we should obtain a copy of the movie Red Dawn because, if I remember correctly, he said, it depicted a reality we would someday soon get to know personally. I have to confess I couldn't digest that statement when he first presented it. I simply could not see at that time how such a scenario could ever become a reality in America. America the beautiful, America the land of the free and brave. Well, today, April 27th, 1992, it appears the Red Dawn at long last has arrived. With all my heart, I hope I am not right. With all my heart, I pray that I am misreading, overreacting, and should just calm down right now and relax. Things surely cannot be as bad as my mind, as my soul, as my spirit say they are. Please refer to the three articles enclosed from the Dayton daily news of this day. Russians eye air hub in Dayton. That's one. The second one is finance ministers okay aid package for Russia, $24 billion plus, while California continues to shake.
Well, and Mr. Gorbachev is coming to, you know this, to visit Wall Street and your banking concerns.
Major world events, every one. All, I believe, correlated. No, not just correlated, all causally related. Commander Hatton, please help me sort this out. I am in shock. This is exactly, precisely, what our master teacher said would happen. Am I overreacting? Am I making something out of nothing? I mean, what if, just what if, they are going to send Spetsnaz troops to Rickenbacker, or send KGB, military troops, tanks, etc., to the Dayton hub? I asked several colleagues today, friends, to read the article, and they laughed. One said, I care about what happens in Columbus or Dayton with the Russians as much as I care about the Japanese quest for Pebble Beach. Zero. End of conversation. 2 days ago, I showed one of these gentlemen Dr. Coleman's beautiful, wondrous chart of the total global organization of the Committee of 300 and its major organization. This person, one of my best friends at work, screamed at me. You're a neo-Nazi. You are showing me exactly the kind of thing that Goebbels passed around in the 1920s. I was astounded by his reaction. I begged him to read some of the material from Spotlight on Clinton and BCCI. I mentioned that Frontline on TV that very night had confirmed most of the essentials. Neo-Nazi, I said, what are you talking about? We are talking about a man who wants to be president of the United States, for heaven's sake, who allegedly has very, very nasty connections. He was not interested in that. He wouldn't even read the headlines. I was stunned. I wouldn't even read what he claimed was neo-Nazi literature. My very, very good friend, a man I trust, a man I work with daily. Quietly, I told him if at any time he wanted to share and discuss any opinion, any facts, any ideas with me, I would be thrilled to do so. But I backed off and left him to find his own peace. The truth, the facts, hard data, produced by years and years of blood, sweat, and the most courageous patriotism I can fathom. Most people simply do not want or cannot hear such things. So be it. The fact is, the Russians are setting up shop in Columbus, and will soon do so in Dayton. And they are doing exactly what Commander Hatton has been telling us again and again and again they would do. Dr. Coleman, you have said 100 times, wake up. I've read your new book. I'm rereading your new book. And I know, I absolutely know what you are talking about. Yes, it's unbelievably hard to accept. But President Fujimori's actions and recent events in Peru alone have demonstrated you know exactly who, what, where, when, and how these evil men operate and fly their trade. I'm heartsick. I'm overwhelmed by the starkness and overt nature of this New World Order's modus operandi. And there it is, and here it is, in Dayton, Ohio. I could write you a book of my thoughts this day. I will not. I simply beg you, Commander, to help me understand just what is happening here in Dayton, in depth. Please, I'm not asking for a personal response. You both are so busy. I am asking that you share more about these activities in tapes, in monographs, or in any way you choose. And please, please help us all to see and understand more about what is really behind these machinations that now are coming right to our very own front doors. Just who is coming to Dayton? just what is their purpose? And how many other cities are such occupation, in how many other cities are such occupations underway? Recently, Commander Hatton said a huge, huge list of tunnels and underground facilities now fully supplied and operational. Ohio was not well represented on that list. He told us why. Because the Russians were above ground in Ohio and Columbus. And he was right as can be. This morning I was told they are coming to Emory's Hub, a stone's throw away from my house in Dayton. And if the Spetsnaz come, based on briefings Commander Hatton gave us about them some months ago, I do not think I'd know one if I saw one. He or she would speak, look, and act just like any other American, except they are killers, programmed to destroy on command. Right on my front step, that sends shivers up my spine. Enough. Please share whatever and whenever you can with all of us. In the meantime, rest assured I'm totally secure in the knowledge that the Master Teacher attends all. I cherish you both for your bravery and for your willingness to share truth with us. Your student into infinity, Daniel Reynolds, Dayton, Ohio.
And they said, we will take your nation and we won't have to fire a shot. Lenin said, they will hang themselves and they will furnish the rope to do it. They've trained your police officers in Los Angeles, San Francisco. They're testing them. I can't urge one strongly enough to go back and look at Arthur Robinson's book, Survival is 10 Feet. No, that may have been ours. Let's see, Fighting Chance, 10 Feet. Well, go read ours too, because it was his. And he struggled and struggled and struggled. And I can give you a couple of incidents that can strike home to each of you in its own way. Dr. Robinson went to his village and he said, I personally will foot the bill to install a shelter in this town for our children. And I believe that he suggested that it be put under the school ground. I could be wrong with that. I'm not going to look it up. But at any rate, all that was needed was just a space. And the town refused. How would you decide who would get in it? Not we'll build enough for all of them. How would you decide who would be saved? The same thing happened identically with this book when we wrote it. The very ones originally who were going to publish it refused to even consider the book because they said it's evil. How would you decide who gets to be in it? Not, can't we get together and go build something so that we can all survive here? But how will you decide who gets to be in it? I can't help ones. I can only offer. But I would suggest that the one from Ashland get in touch with Arthur Robinson. It won't help to come here. We don't have any yet either, do we? And they're efforting to make blame sure that nobody has resources enough to have shelters. And they're not going to put them in for you. And if you go knock on Northrop today, they'll shoot you. Just as sure as the world, they won't even let you get to the door to knock. They're sending spacecraft out. And they are on a crash program. My goodness, surely you heard it. While another five buildings are burning in the night, then comes morning and they start giving you some statistics of Los Angeles. 49 dead, blah, 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 blah. $500 million. $500 million crashed on Edwards runway 4 days ago. And it didn't even hardly make the news. $500 million in a piece of junk that couldn't even land. It was like a flash water. And you're going to go to space, and what are you going to study? Weightlessness. We're going to see if tomatoes will grow in weightlessness. You can grow them down here with weight and get $2 a pound. Is there something wrong with this? What are you doing building another prototype of something that wouldn't fly in the first place? You had to account for $500 million. Plus the fact that what you saw was not what happened. That's what really ticks me off. Did a plane crash at Edwards? Oh my God, more than you will ever dream about. Well, this was going to be a better Phantom step. Well, if it was good at all, it would be better. But what in the world will you use as trappings to salt the mine, if you will, when one start flying over? What do you think really might have crashed there? What do you think maybe is down there? They have to give you something to see when one's bumble over the property. We had a lot of fun on the 17th of August, 1987. We had a nice round craft with five crew members right out at Yucca Flats. And they couldn't budge it. They couldn't get in it. They couldn't get near it. And it wasn't very far off the road. So when we finally let them near it, they pulled out five cosmonauts, all nice, tall, lean Pleiadians. All of them appeared to be dead, but two did show life signs. But they couldn't do anything to any of them anyway. They couldn't get around them to touch them. They'd get electric shock. Well, finally, when they figured out what to do about that, they transported them. Can you believe this? From Yucca Flats to Edwards Air Force Base first? A little out of your way, since they ended up at Nellis in Las Vegas, 50 miles away from where it was down. Oh, it was an interesting little period of a few days. And, of course, all of the energy forms were sitting aboard craft. T tinkering with your military, because they didn't know what to do with these two that weren't dead. And they're still not dead. They have them over at Nellis. They have them in intensive care or whatever, you know, all this mechanism, all this stuff around them. And every now and then, their own owners tweak them a little bit. You know, as you walk in the room, oh, I think I'll tweak Joe a little bit. And he'll gasp and gulp, and everyone in the room will turn purple, you know. It's serious time. And they give you these things. Doesn't matter what did or did not crash. Just know that what you saw was not what you got. And how do you know that? Because when that plane hit that ground without a landing gear, it burst into flames. You could see it. And yet the pilot walked away with only minor injuries. A pilot was not going to walk away from that mess. It isn't so much that these things are shown to you or told to you. It is that the truth would suffice. Why do they make up such stupid tales? And basically, let me tell you why. Because you buy it every time. Every time. They never have to change their tape because you buy it every time. Every generation buys it. I'd like some opinions about this week. I'd like somebody in this room to share with us. Some of you have been down in LA, some of you have been around other places, some of you have just flat heard things that others haven't. By the way, don't think that Bakersfield was left unscathed.
Well, I heard someone tried to buy a gun and all the gun shops were closed.
Yes.
My son has to go into LA all the time to work. He works for Bell Telephone. And he called me that first night and said that the company beeped him and told him all to get out of there. 2 o'clock. They had to leave town immediately and leave all their service go. And he was in the morning on a street that was had a big mess on it in the afternoon. And he got out and he said that they made everybody in the whole Bell system that were in LA leave. And they couldn't go back yet.
All the non-AT&T services went down.
Yeah.
In other words, Sprint and all the other ones. Yeah. They weren't working. AT&T no. was the only one that worked.
Well, he said Bell was having a time, too. He said, you've never seen such a mess. He said he'd never, ever seen such a mess, driving through the streets and the people and what was going on.
And the people weren't taking food, they were taking things.
I thought it was interesting that the I went to make a credit card phone call and it didn't work. It has always worked. I mean, why would the computers, you know, why would the computers be affected? I just went to make a credit card phone call by computer and it said that you had to wait for an operator or something. It didn't function normally when I was in LA. And when I went to drive out of LA on Thursday, it took approximately an hour to go about 3 miles just to get onto the freeway. The traffic was so bad. And outside of the area where all, you know, south east LA or south central, I saw definitely more than the average number of vehicles with shattered windows driving around. It was just like three or four, but usually you'd see one maybe in a month or two, and it was just a little strange.
from here on Thursday night, you could not, they kept giving you this information that the lines were busy when you called the east.
Isn't that interesting? This is what I want to hear.
Let me also share my experience. I live right there at the corner of World Cup and Hollywood Boulevard. And April 30, heavily my plans set for the day. But last minute, I've been feeling a very terrible vibration of fire right in my place. So last minute, about 2 o'clock, I decided to move out of that apartment. I called up my driver in my shop to pick me up in the truck. And I heard the move out of the apartment. After about 2 hours, I've been telling my neighbors in the building to move out or consider getting themselves under safety because I'm feeling some kind of terrible, I couldn't even explain it. I just feel the situation and I had this dream a month ago about these things happening, but I couldn't explain. So what I did was last month, without even knowing what's going to happen, I just followed my instinct, my intuition, and talked to the landlord that to give her the notice of my moving out. Last minute, April 30, after about 2 o'clock, I just, by instinct or by whatever, by gut feel, I immediately move out. And a few hours after that, the building next to my apartment was blown up. It fell in fire. There was heavily raising fire. And as I was calling my neighbors in the apartment, everybody was in panic, moving all their stuff from out of the building. So it makes me feel good that I was able to get out of there and have to undergo the same traumatic experience.
I found it very interesting that these arsonists were like invisible. Nobody ever actually saw them. And then I heard a comment from a co-worker of mine saying that a couple of gang members were caught and they commented that they were paid to do this.
Yes.
Along those lines.
Yes.
Is it possible, I was watching on television and I noticed that the fires were a little bit different, that the roofs, when they run the smoke coming out of the windows, that the roofs were being burnt. And for some reason, by listening to about the possibility of designating for the earthquake, could there have been some possibilities that before this was happening, there was plans made by maybe some service people that went to these various companies and planted something that could be designated?
Well, I'm sure there probably were.
I didn't know if I was far-fetched with my thinking or not, but the way that they were set, it seemed to me the small companies, I'm not talking about the looting places, but I'm talking about the little industrial places that were entrepreneur-type businesses.
Well, in the drive-by type of bombings, if you will, the cock tape type, the gasoline fires, very frequently those are thrown onto the roof. So that accounts for some of it. Also, many of the little shops have a common roof, common attic, and it just goes through that like a tunnel. So there are many things that you have brought into play here. You had Daryl Gates warning all of you. Burma, for one, is a bit naive. You would think that with all of my mouth that she would not be. And yet she has to spend her time feeling the same way the rest of you do. You're only going to know when to get out by listening to that warning and responding. You cannot depend on someone blowing a whistle in your ear or shaking you. You're going to have to put things into perspective. And you're going to have to listen to your own warning. And act accordingly. But as we sit here, you can see what happened. You've got 17 million people in Greater Los Angeles. And all of the international papers, that's what's on their front page. Even Gaddafi is making his speeches. And percentage-wise, you're untouched. So you have to know that it's political. And yet your country has become a tinderbox, ready to explode like this. This just shows you how far along the plan has progressed. And ones want to believe that if we just pray, it will all go away. Well, I sit and hope that you will pray for wisdom, because it's not going to go away. And these are only the beginnings. As things begin to fall apart. And therefore you can't wait and wait and wait to make some preparations. On the other hand, you have to use wisdom with that also. Just running helter and skelter for someone else to tend you or be responsible for you is not the way to do it. And it's like ones asking me, well, what should I do? Tell me what to do. I'm not going to tell you what to do. That is not my mission. That is yours. And I have 6 billion people to be concerned about. And I don't want to sound harsh or hard. I am coming through very bluntly. I don't like that. We have a visitor here with us. I feel like this is my son. And Randall, would you please acknowledge that?
I acknowledge.
And I know that he sits here and says, well, the old man hasn't changed much. He's still yelling at everybody. But we've come a long way. A long way. We've all done a lot of work. And I'm very pleased to see the work that you've been doing. And I'm glad to see that you've brought a friend. I get crosswise with ones. Sometimes harder than I would like to be. Because of the great responsibility that's fallen on the shoulders of all of you ones. I will have to make some amends with Dr. Coleman. My intent is not to be insulting. My intent is to bring truth. And yet sometimes the truth is painful. And I realize that very often you ones have very little recourse but defense. And as a matter of fact, I want to say, just like you ones do, that, well, I don't understand what it is. Well, I understand exactly what it is. when you hit the nail on the head, and it seems small. You wish you hadn't said it or done it or whatever. And instead of being able to let it go and moving on, you've got to get hung up about it as part of growing. It's part of growing. But you see, I will not apologize to Dr. Coleman for what he perceives he's been damaged by me about. I made a statement that perhaps Coleman is not his name. Well, I will guarantee you, if you go to the gate and try to get into the place where he lives, if you ask for Coleman, you will not get him. So what are we talking about? I'm trying to keep you alive. You are human beings. You are not even atmospherians yet. You aren't even anthuriums yet.
Pretty far down.
You're right.
Make a change of tape.